Good morning, everybody. Man, I just love that song. Shane, I think you were the one that created that. So I want to give you hats off to that. That gets me so pumped up. I can come into this show flat, and the second that starts playing, I'm ready to go. So I hope you guys are all as pumped up as I am today. Today is September 11th, and this is episode 17 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I'm your host, Coleman, and I am joined by Shane, Hazel, I see up there. It looked like Jordan just hopped off on the Operation Libertas. But I want to give a big shout out to Greg Foss, I see out in the audience. Good morning, sir. And I'm happy to see you back on Twitter or X. How are you doing this morning, Shane?
Morning, everybody. I'm doing good. Stayed up a little late watching that debacle of a debate last night. And it was... I don't know. Probably should have just caught the highlights today and saved a lot of frustration with the current political crisis here in America.
Absolutely. You could have saved yourself some valuable time by just picking up the highlights. I think there was really only three talking points they hit on. But it says more about our state of who we put into the as the president. So it says a lot about our culture, and it doesn't look very promising. But we'll definitely touch on that a little bit later. So while we get everybody coming up on the stage, and while everyone's getting the gunk out of their eyes, you're refilling your coffee, I just want to make sure everybody understands what the purpose of our mission is and the goal of this show. And that's to defend the values that our nation was founded upon. And we want to champion decentralized, trustless systems that empower individuals, communities, and small businesses, and eliminate any central authority so we can advance our cause for a free and open society. We're going to accomplish our goal by harnessing the power of Bitcoin to promote a world where every individual has the undeniable right to control their own destiny, their own assets, and their own privacy. We do not support tyranny in any of its forms, and together we'll use our experience and passion to ensure that liberty thrives. We are veterans. We are Bitcoiners, and we are for freedom. Hoorah! Good morning, Terrence.
How's it going, Coleman? Are we voting for Bitcoin after last night's debate?
We should always be voting for Bitcoin. Every day you make your DCA, you skip that Starbucks coffee, and you put it into Bitcoin, you're making a vote for Bitcoin and for a better society. But I would definitely like to, I'm sure everybody, if you didn't watch the debate, you've seen all the talking points. I would definitely like to get some of the thoughts and opinions of our brilliant panel on how they thought that went last night.
I would like to start out by saying, before we just like completely crush Kamala or Trump, I want to start out by saying what a masterclass of politicking Kamala put on. Everything that she talked about, just about, with the exception of like two or three things, she was blaming Trump or the other side in whatever context she was talking about for doing the exact same things that her/the Biden administration is doing. And it was just constant. Like, I mean, she used like the three main Trump quotes that have been used for like 4 years now, 4 to 8 years now, that have been completely like debunked. Or if you just listen to like three more seconds of the clip, you understand what the context was and what the reality was. It was like a masterclass in what politics is. And I think it just reinforced the fact that this election is going to come down to it's not red and blue pill, red and blue in the traditional sense. It's the red pill versus the blue pill. And that's not to say you have to be part of one of those colored parties. It's just the people looking for truth versus the people still gobbling up the propaganda.
Yes, and I think Randy K, I see you in the audience, sir. I definitely want to just shout you out for your Daily Intelligence Bulletin. At the bottom, he puts in notes and what he thinks going on. And I definitely want to read a little bit about what he posted in there, because I think it's really applicable. I think most people in this space, especially on this panel, understand what's going on. But for the people that are just stumbling across our space or just giving us a quick listen, I want to go over this because I think it's really important everybody understands what's going on. And so Randy K put in there, in the area of fifth generation warfare, where the mind of the populace is the battlefield, media reporting is the large conduit for manipulation. For centuries, this has taken the form of propaganda, but increases in technology and leverage have given the participants in the battle of the hearts and minds an advantage. The structure of world geopolitics resting upon the hegemony of the U.S. empire is wholly fascinated and focused on the U.S. presidential election for further direction. This year, being an election year, is the climax of fifth generation warfare that begins with narratives, channels for those narratives, and amplification in other domains of warfare. The legacy and news media is in full-on war mode and affecting this change, and reporting is far from objective. In other words, the current news cycle is one of manipulation and fabrication for your hearts and minds. And so I think, again, most of us are pretty aware that there's a lot of manipulation going on, and it's definitely very biased. But I thought that was a really good note Randy put in there. I just wanted to make sure everybody heard that.
Well, and look how the debate started. It started by them saying that the other person's mic will be muted and there was no live audience. And when they introduced them, they walked out and there was almost crickets. It was so quiet because there was no audience. And the reason why they did that is because basically Trump demolished the legacy media way of doing these debates, because he would interact with the audience, he would break the fourth wall, and it was very apparent that they have to change those things in order to try to control the narrative, because they can't have people either booing him and him calling them out for why they're booing, or cheering when he says something that they don't want to be cheered. It was very apparent from the get-go.
It is very weird when you look outside, and when you look from an outsider's perspective, it's just an controlled environment. And you're right, if they don't have that controlled narrative, people are allowed to run with a little bit more. And so it's just, we live in very interesting times. Lisa, I know you probably have a lot to say on this, and I'd love to get your insight.
I mean, I hate the media. I said it on stage in Nashville, and I'm saying it more publicly. I think that they are preventing everyone from using their own logic and their own information. And we're just gullible. We just believe them, right? Most people just believe what they read on the New York Times website without question. How did we get here? It's number one thing I recommend to folks. If somebody says like, oh, can you give one recommendation for how to understand Bitcoin? Like, the one recommendation I say is just quit listening to the mainstream news, right? Like, you've just got to start there if you want to understand Bitcoin.
Absolutely. And again, that's why I think Randy's words this morning just had to be read. You know, the legacy and news media is in full on war mode. And when you stop to look and just do a little research, I think a lot of us, maybe it's just because we're being conditioned just to trust everything and don't fact check everything you see is correct. But a lot of people just don't know how to do a search to verify everything. And myself included, sometimes, you get in the heat middle of things, the story fits your own narrative, so you believe it, but you have to make sure you're checking yourself. And good morning, AC.
AC still.
Good morning,
there we go.
No, I think I'm good, Terrence. Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, AC. It's always lovely to hear your voice.
Yeah, so it was interesting. I didn't watch the debate, but I'm going to pin something to the nest. You know, it's not very often that I agree with Peter Schiff, but this was probably one of my biggest takeaways. Shortly after the debate, he posted something about, you know, the mainstream media and kind of what we're talking about, and really how dishonest and manipulative it is to the public in trying to shape the narrative as we move towards November.
Yes, they didn't talk about it. And I would have guessed that that would have been touched on just a little bit. But they avoided that like the plague. And it's really concerning. And we're going to play a clip a little bit later about Thomas Massie speaking about the credit resolution, about the spending for government in Congress where they have to pass a bill. And he really just calls everybody out, and he just calls it political theater, and he's calling it out for what it is. So once we're done kind of talking about some of the other points on the debate last night, I want to roll into that because I think it's worth listening. We're not going to play the full clip. It's about 6.5 minutes long, but we're going to play the first 4 minutes. I tried to see if there was ways to make that shorter, but he just hits on so many points. I think it's for everyone's benefit to listen to that first four minutes. So Jacob, if you can go ahead and start getting that ready in the back, and then we'll just ask if anybody has anything else they'd like to share on the debate last night.
Yeah, I think I'm going to I think we're tiptoeing through the tulips a little bit here with what's going on with the media. And, you know, I'll be the guy. Like, I'm just done with it. Everybody talks about the media influence, and it was apparent last night, but it's who owns the media? Who owns the media outright? I mean, BlackRock owns shares of damn near, I should say, almost controlling shares of every company out there. Who are they? We know who they are. We know who owns Meta. We know who owns Google. We know who owns ChatGPT. We know who owns NBC, Disney, which is the parent company of ABC. We know who owns CBS, Time Warner, CNN, HBO, New York Times, Bloomberg, ADL. We know who owns all of this stuff. Why are we so afraid to say who they are, right? And I'm not saying it's all Jews, right? I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to sit here and say it's all of them. But I'm going to tell you right now, the mass media, the legacy complex, it's all owned by them. And if you noticed last night, the one subject that the two candidates agreed on, it was like a love affair for Israel. Not one damn mention of genocide at all during that time. Does he want to stop the whole, you know, conflict in Ukraine? Yeah. Do we want to stop the conflict in Israel? Nothing was said. We've got to start being brave enough and coming together in this and absolutely addressing the issue. And today's 9/11. It changed a lot of our lives forever. And a lot of that was built on lies. You can go out there right now and go through Twitter, and you're going to see all sorts of things that maybe are far out there. I mean, it's taken over 23 years now to kind of come out and have this space to operate in and start talking about these things. And what are we met with? More censorship from the same media that is absolutely bought and paid for and controlled solely by a single group of people. It's time to get very serious about addressing who the actual people who want the demise of this political system, this economic system, our entire country. Like, we are being invaded. And you can go back and you can look at who controls all these different advocacy groups for moving settlers. Like, this is clear and apparent. We know exactly who it is, and people are afraid to say it because of association and who their bosses are. I'm absolutely sick of it. This, we've got a much bigger issue as Americans, and the political contest that we saw last night, the complete fabrication, was just that. It was a stage play between two incompetent people that should never, ever hold the nuclear codes for anything. I guess I'll stop there.
No, you don't have to stop there. It was good, though. I think people need to hear that and understand what's going on. Because you're right. Everyone's fed a fairy tale, and they're hidden from the truth. And no one wants to dig into the truth because it's ugly. It opens up a lot of ugly doors.
Well, even I forget who he was doing an interview with, but Trump was recently on with somebody. I want to, maybe Piers Morgan, I forget who. But he flat out says, yeah, a few years ago, the Israeli lobby was like the most powerful lobby and had all this control and blah, blah, blah. And he's almost spinning it like, well, now they don't have as much control. And that's a bad thing because, look, they're not able to get the support that they need to continue this fight against Hamas, which is really just the genocide against the Palestinian people. And it's just like, do you not? He just said it. Like, I don't think he even realized he said it in like the typical Trump fashion, but like, he's just kind of saying the honest truth of, yeah, there's this big lobby that pushes for another country's objectives all the time. It doesn't even have to be like the religious aspect or whatever, but like there is a aspect of this that is pushing another country's objectives. And this, and Trump's supposed to be the America First candidate.
It's AIPAC, Jordan. And that's the thing, is AIPAC has spent over $100 million on both Democrats and Republicans in this election already. Literally, JFK was trying to get these guys to register with FARA, and about 6 days later, he ended up dead. So, like, this whole thing is blowing wide open right now. And Thomas Massie, the amazing congressman out of Kentucky, he talked about this with Tucker Carlson on his show. He said basically that every member of Congress has an AIPAC handler. Think about that. You know what? A couple weeks later, guess who's dead? Thomas Massie's wife. We still don't have a whole bunch on that. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't really believe in coincidences. I think that was a message. Lisa, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to say thank you to Shane for all of that. But Shane, like, how do we get good people to stand up and run for office? Right? Where are those people hiding? I feel like most people are just afraid of not afraid, but I'll just leave it to you. Where are those people hiding?
They're not hiding. I mean, you're talking to one. I've run for 3 offices, 2 at the federal level, 1 at the state level for governor. And what are we? Here's the problem: is we Bitcoiners, right? With this new incentive structure, we don't trust politicians, and that's a good thing, right? We shouldn't trust politicians, but we should be working in that political realm, because there is a lot of capital that's coming in from the Bitcoin community now that can start putting up candidates that they know they have vetted that can't be got to by by AIPAC or anybody else out there. It's not that they're not there. It's that there is a system built around this economic machine that they have where they can print money at will. And if they can print money at will and they own all of the media that we've already talked about, and they own the political class through political blackmail, there's no entry in through the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. Like, I've tried. And that's the thing, is I've seen behind the scenes, and I know exactly how this is done. If Bitcoiners want to have an effect on politics, you can't start with the people who are already tainted. You have to grab people from probably the Bitcoin community and start to raise them up and say, hey man, this guy's at least got the brass balls to go out there and say what needs to be said. And if he's willing to go out there and stand on a stage, we should probably get behind him. We should probably start pushing, you know, a lot of what we can do towards these people, because the system now, it's a complete fiat system. And in a complete fiat system, you're going to continue to get what we've got. It's just going to continue the inflation. It's going to continue the debt. You're going to have the spiral until you get to the point where Bitcoiners are sitting there going, hey, we have to be involved. We have to be grooming candidates. We have to be checking our candidates, and we have to start putting capital behind them. You're never going to get anywhere.
And I think RFK was probably the closest option that we had this cycle around, right? And many of us did what we could, but, you know, it's when you're stuck with a system and stuck with this sort of, you know, two choice system, it's tough, because eventually you're like, well, what's the least worst of the two?
But you got to remember too, RFK is also is Israeli supporter, man. Like he's been out on it multiple times on the campaign trail talking about I'm supporting Israel, and you know, taking pictures with that that one dude Shmuley, the Rabbi Shmuley, like that guy. Are you kidding me? Like there, that's the problem. Is no matter who you vote for, you get Israel.
Yeah, and Lisa, I think partly to answer your question too is, and we're going to get into this with the clip from Massey, but at the federal level, all of this is really, it's just theater. It's none of that really affects you. I mean, except for taxes and the border, which are and spending, which are three of the biggest issues. Everything that truly affects you and that you have control over is at the local level. So building things and getting connected at the local level, knowing people there, preventing your town from becoming the next Springfield, those are the things that are way more important, way more impactful. And that's where we can have a much bigger impact, because every single one of us can do it as an individual in our local community. And if you have questions on how to do that, please reach out to us, because we've got guys all over the place working on that right now.
I like that, Jordan. And I'm of the belief that we need to have smaller government. And to do that in a timely manner, I think having the states separate and become their own, not country, but maybe more like how the EU is set up, where you're able to drive through, but each country is a little bit different. Even if the country was in complete harmony, we're just too different. Like the states, I'm down in Texas, so the states up in the Northeast and Northwest, we're completely different. We have different needs, we have different economies. So it doesn't make sense that we're all tied in with, you know, the same laws and rules, because they're not applicable to us. So I think that's inevitably what's going to happen, is that the country will be broken up. And how that happens, or how quickly it happens, I think depends a lot on what happens in November and shenanigans being pulled. But I'd like to go ahead and start changing topics a little bit. And I'd like, Jacob, if you could, let's roll video one and play the Thomas Massey clip. So give me a thumbs up whenever you're ready, sir, and we'll get that rolling. It's a little bit longer. It's about 4 minutes. But it's definitely worth a listen. So here we go.
And I would call it Mr. Massey.
Can we be honest with the American people about what's going on here? This is political. We call out both sides right here. It's all posturing. It's fake fighting. We all know where it ends up. This is Groundhog Day. I don't care if the Democrat is the speaker or Republican speaker. We always... in September, and we get an omnibus. Sometimes there's a twist on that. We might get the omnibus before Christmas, but it comes after Christmas. But that's what's going to happen. And in the meantime, it's political theater. You know, we've got some, it's good theater. We've got great writers. I wish they'd just come up with a plot. It's the same plot every fiscal year. What should we be doing? It's already been discussed. We should have done 12 bills. We should have done 12 separate bills. But again, whether Democrats are in control or Republicans are in control, we never do the 12 separate bills. Why do we all, at least as we did last year, and why do we never cut spending? It's because Democrats are the ones. And they're both going to go up. I guarantee it. And both us fine letting the bureaucrats do their thing, which should be their thing, Article 1 in the Constitution. We are empowered.
Can anyone else hear it right now?
No, this is not very professional, Coleman. What happened?
Yeah, no, I can't hear it either.
I'm sorry. That's my fault, 100%. So we will go ahead. That's the overlords trying to make sure we're not talking about this, but screw them.
Illegal mandates livestock by the USDA, targeting plant vaccine.
Hey, Jacob,
transgenic plant vaccine at NSF, and since the industrial complex at the end of which the NSF is part of, automobile kill switch at the DOT. Now, these are all things I think most Democrats are just fine with, this kind of totalitarian state bureaucrats pushing on us. But Republicans at least pretend to be against these things. But what are we going to do this September? We're going to fund every freaking thing we have exposed. The tool that we have is the funding. Why are we funding? We don't have to. Well, it's because we're addicted.
Okay. Probably just to summarize that, Coleman.
Yeah, one point he's trying to
think is important.
Make it stop.
On my end right now, unfortunately. I'm sorry about that. We're having some technical issues. So, yeah, we're definitely going to summarize what's going on here. It's unfortunate we weren't able to play that clip. It was really powerful. I recommend we'll throw it up in the nest, and I will make sure that you have access to listen to it. So just really quick, for people who don't understand, CR, which Thomas Massie is talking about, stands for Continuing Resolution. It's just a patch to get the government funded until whatever timeline on that CR ends. So currently, this CR is supposed to end on the end of this month. And they're supposed to make it so it lasts 1 year to fund the government for the fiscal year. Government fiscal year start October 1st, I believe. Please correct me if I'm wrong. But last year, or about a year and a half ago, the Congress lifted the debt ceiling. So there's no cap on it. And the goal was to make sure that they had a new budget in place that were they would be able to cut 1% of all federal spending afterwards. And so that's what it was for. But currently, the Congress is only wanting to put a six-month CR in place, so it bypasses that 1% spending cut, and they're able to just kind of push whatever they want out again. One of the bills, or one of the pieces on this bill that's holding it up, is the SAVE Act. And Massie talks about what's going on with that. And the SAVE Act, for those who don't know, it would prevent non-Americans from illegally voting in elections, which I think is ridiculous. We even have to have a bill that says that. If you're not a citizen of a country, there's no way that you should be able to vote. That this seems like kindergarten, but apparently we need to remind people that. And so Massey's argument is that this bill will pass in Congress, but as soon as it gets over to the Senate to get finalized, they're going to blow it down and dissect it and take out that SAVE Act. And the reason it's just going to get passed is because everybody is addicted to spending. And I think that's pretty evident for everybody that's up here today. But I definitely want to get into it and get everybody's thoughts on this. And how do we rein in this spending? And at what point do we realize, oh, crap, what have we done? Terrence, AC, any thoughts on that?
Well, I'll just add, unless somebody's talking that I can't hear, that was an excellent summary, Coleman. I think one of the biggest takeaways, though, was just having somebody with the balls to explain very clearly what this political theater is and the game that they're playing. And it, both sides doing it, doesn't matter who's in power, it doesn't matter who the speaker is, it doesn't matter who the president is, the same thing. This, it's the uniparty. He like perfectly explains this is how the uniparty operates. And it's just going to keep going until we decide to put in some people that, like a Massie, who actually cares about doing the right thing.
Yes, and you have to give it to him. He's got balls of steel. And I'm going to say it, he is not scared to call out what's going on. And I give him mad props for that. I have a lot of respect for this man. And I hope he inspires more to do the same thing. Because we're on a very, very dangerous path right now. And a lot of people just, they're feeling it, but they have no idea what's going on. And they just, We'll need more discussion like this and an open debate forum where people can hear it and there's no censorship, because there's a very, very small segment of the population that's ever going to hear that clip that was just played.
Massey needs to be prepared to turn his head to the right.
Unfortunately, I think you're correct on that. Yeah, I think he will be Clintoned. Another thing I definitely want to mention, because it falls in with this, Lynn Alden posted, if you guys aren't following Lynn Alden, you're missing out on a lot of great content. But she posted out a chart with a visualization of the Social Security Administration projection on when their reserves will run out. And so that has a chart all the way from 1957, or a graph. Starts at 1957, it goes up, the money in the trust peaks right around 2016, 2017, and then they forecast from 21 all the way down to 2033. And by 2035, the Social Security Administration predicts that they will have no money. And for those who have not found Bitcoin yet, this is going to be a very scary reality for them, that they're going to have to work indefinitely. There is nothing for them on the other side.
That's part of the hard times that people are trying to avoid. Like, unfortunately, like that might come to fruition. It sucks for a lot of people, but the fact is nobody is living off of Social Security anyway. Like, it might help supplement some things. And it seems like this is like a football that everyone keeps wanting to punt down the field, and it's just delaying the inevitable. I mean, I understand that people are going to suffer through it, but we need these hard times to correct all of the malfeasance that's in the system right now. And it's just a matter of when is it going to happen, and how hard is it going to be when it finally comes?
I think it needs to be a hard reset, unfortunately. I don't think if it's a soft consequence, nobody learns. There has to be, unfortunately, it's going to be. That's the result of the situation we're in. But if it's not a hard consequence, no one's going to learn from their mistakes, and it'll just continue to go. Like you said, they're going to keep trying to kick the can. It doesn't matter how hard they're kicking. I just don't see them putting it past much further than this. The next 10 years are going to be pretty crazy. With everything going on. Wade Wiley, Wade Finley, I see your
hand. Yo, what's up, guys? Yeah, I kind of concur with you. I got a little bit of a black pill kind of take on all this. What's interesting is if you look at some of the congressional appropriations over the last couple years here, especially going through the inflationary period, you can actually draw some trend lines in the congressional appropriations when they're having to commit basically 30-40% more purchasing power money supply to government programs and government projects just to make up for the fact that how much money they printed. And so it's actually starting to look in some of the congressional appropriations like an exponential rate of inflation. And I think once we get to the point, and I think Lynn Alden and a couple of folks have talked about it in the past, is once we get to the point where we're talking about $1-3 trillion a year basically prints just to have to cover the interest on the debt, I think we'll start looking at like market confidence at that point actually getting shaken out. Even my parents' generation, I regularly speak to my parents and folks about this, and while they're not totally sold on the Bitcoin argument or whatnot, they are definitely looking to alternative assets to try and beat the inflation print. And they're not even discussing political. I mean, they're going to vote for Kamala Harris. There's not. I mean, they just believe that Trump is ethically unfit to be president. I think Trump's probably the lesser of the two evils, because hopefully he might shake some things up in the intelligence community. But the I'm just shocked that people are just in this car speeding at 200 miles an hour down the highway. We're just going to go clean off the guardrails, and everyone just admits that this is inevitable. everyone admits it's inevitable, and they're just hoping that they can hold on to their stock coupons or some gold certificates or something like that to preserve their wealth and their purchasing power. And it just looks like an absolute mess, and I just see zero. I see zero alternative. I see zero political action. I see a zero incentive for anybody to do anything until we just crash clean through the guardrails.
That was really well said. Thank you, Wade. I really appreciate that insight. You made a lot of good points there, and I think you lined that up perfectly. This, I know it's been mentioned before, but I think this is probably the last debate. Or not debate, the last election where they can get away not talking about the economy and the spending. Because the next one in 2028, we're right there on the doorstep of where a lot of these predictions and forecasts are showing just flashing red. And so, I really appreciate your feedback, Wade. Thank you very much.
Thanks. And it was a pleasure seeing everybody at the Bitcoin Nashville.
I want to shout out Death and Bitcoin in the audience. Punch Plate, Gabe Lord, I see 256 out there. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. I really appreciate it. And in case, again, you're new to the space, if you're a veteran, you're still looking for answers, please make sure you send us a direct message and we'll get you connected with one of our extended communities. We have over 600 vets and we're constantly growing. So make sure to reach out. We're here for answers. We're here to help and guide you, direct you. So make sure you ask for that. Ask for help. Reach out to us. So some other things I think worth touching on today is, I believe it was over the last couple of days, Putin came out and acknowledged that Russia is going to be a Bitcoin mining leader. He stated that they mined about 54,000 Bitcoin in the year 23. And he made this speech during an Eastern Economic Forum. He said, Russia is going to become one of the world leaders in Bitcoin mining. He said it was made possible by due to the energy surplus that they have leveraged in areas like Serbia. And so I think you're starting to see I forget the guy's name now. I apologize. Where he's talking about, he's got the horns on his book. Lowry. There we go. I think we're starting to see his thesis play out a little bit more. And you're going to start seeing more governments seeing the inevitable, and they're going to start taking over this. It's going to be an arms race. I'd like to get some thoughts on this subject right now from y'all.
Yeah, I think Putin and Russia are doing an excellent job maneuvering. I don't even want to say militarily, but using other realms of warfare to gain national, to position his nation better. And a big arena of that is the economics. I think what they did, knowing that we were going to put sanctions on them, and yet their economy didn't crumble because of it. In fact, the ruble was doing great for like the first 6 or 9 months after sanctions. It's not like Russia didn't know what moves the U.S. and the West were going to take once he moved on Ukraine. And he's just kind of outplayed everybody because he sees what the typical strategy is of the West. They do the same thing all the time. So we've become very predictable. And he just used that to his own advantage. And notice, it's only been like the last 6 months or so that I've noticed where they're saying how Putin's the richest man in the world. Well, that's not just some like talking point to, I don't know, make people not like him or something. I don't even know how true it is, but it probably is. I think he's used the turmoil that he was going to create and positioned himself economically to succeed from it, and that's how he's getting his wars paid for, as opposed to the U.S. just having being the behemoth and just doing the same thing it's been doing for 75 years, 100 years, and just print their way out of it, and it's crippling us, and we're not able to adjust to the new paradigm shift. I'm not trying to, like, stroke Putin's ego or anything. I think he's got plenty of people around him for that. I'm just pointing out some facts of he knows how to play geopolitics much better than any U.S. leader does.
No, and he does. And again, I think you said it right. He's a very smart individual, or maybe just appears smart or intelligent just because of what we have as leadership down here in the United States. But when you hear him speak, like, he's able to talk without a teleprompter, without cheat notes, without stumbling, and he's able to recite articles from history. He's able to recite articles from history, recite specific events. He's very smart. So again, same thing like Jordan just said, I'm not trying to stroke his ego, but it's something to watch out for. These major companies, these major countries, they're playing for keeps. They're not messing around. And they see weakness on our side, and they're trying to take advantage of whatever area they can.
Yeah, Fred Thiel had a really important speech the other day. I think he was sitting up there on a board, and he was talking about bringing what a strategic advantage it would be for, you know, America, and really an imperative at this point to keep the 40% of the mining here in the United States. So this is one of those things where if we're too slow to adjust, you know, if you got Fred Thiel talking about this at that kind of level, it's time for, you know, the quote unquote political class to sit up and listen. Obviously we talked about that earlier, how they're all compromised and they're going to do whatever their handlers tell them to do. But, you know, I'm going to pull Mike Hobart this morning, I guess, and kind of be that guy. But it's time for people to start getting ready for what the consequences of that are, man. And, if you don't know the Bolshevik Revolution and what happened there, and, you know, the list that obviously are being put together thanks to X and the rest of the algos out there, you better really understand, you know, where you are and what your place is going to be in history. But, you know, in terms of the United States adopting Bitcoin at the level of, you know, Russia, we've got to get to that point. And I think maybe the silver lining is we're still seeing, you know, nation states out there that are selling off their Bitcoin, which, you know, separation of state and money is a good thing. So if people can capitalize on that and kind of bring this in a little bit into their local areas, I think there's at least a really good shot that, you know, there's going to be some balkanization, you know, not only, you know, around the world, but there's going to be some balkanization here in the U.S. and it's probably going to be for the better, the betterment of most of our lives.
That's a good little segue there, Shane, to something that I wanted to mention. As far as it comes to, like, you know, we think X is this great thing and it's a freedom platform, and yeah, like, it's great, use it as much as it you can, but also understand that it's a huge honeypot. And if you scroll all the way to the beginning of all the nested items, we've shared a clip from an interview we did at Anders pleb party in Nashville. And this interview is with Anders. So there's a little clip here, but if you want to go see the interview, you got to go to Noster. Our interviews are going to be there exclusively, and that might annoy you. But the thing is, I think as Bitcoin veterans, we're more than just Bitcoin maximalists. We're freedom maximalists, and we're using X as a platform to try to reach more people. But we really want to encourage people to go use more freedom tech. And one of the big things is Noster. If you don't understand Noster, don't know what it is, need help setting it up, reach out to us and we will get you connected and help you out. But I really encourage you to go check out the interviews. They're really interesting, I think. And there's going to be some good stuff on there. But start using Noster. Start using decentralized social media platforms. It's not based on algorithms. It's not controlled by an individual. Start looking into Freedom Tech, because that's another way that we fight back against this tyranny. It's going to be the difference between success and failure in this fight.
Yes, and if you don't understand what Jordan means by that, just kind of look what's going on in the countries where that freedom of speech is being suppressed, like Brazil. So just make sure that you understand. We really need to, on the back channels, get somebody up here to really talk about Noster and kind of give us a little demo on how to do it, make sure that everyone understands. Wade, I see that you're back up here. Do you have another question, sir?
Yeah, well, just a quick comment. Considering the Putin's latest comments that he made on Bitcoin and the issues with the Brazilian censorship of X and whatnot, the biggest kind of tail risk that I was seeing for Bitcoin adoption was effectively that BRICS and their upcoming summit here, that potentially they would slow Bitcoin adoption by not allowing its use. And so I kind of see that tail risk going away a little bit with Putin basically stating that they're adopting some sort of a Bitcoin standard. But my biggest concern and question was, if the BRICS countries and the commodity producing countries of the planet are effectively not using, delaying Bitcoin adoption or not accepting it as payment for the commodities that they produce, that I would see that as a tail risk for Bitcoin adoption. And I would see that as kind of it would definitely delay adoption and could hurt the space in general. I was wondering if you guys had any thoughts about that in regards to BRICS' upcoming monetary policy and challenging U.S. dollar hegemony.
That's definitely above my wheelhouse, but if no one else wants to jump on and take over, I can give you my thoughts on it. But just remember, I'm a professional crayon eater.
That's fine. We're just kicking the ball around, guys.
Yeah. So my thoughts, I'm not sure if you guys have heard the follow Santiago, it's the dollar milkshake guy. And I kind of believe what he says. I think we give too much credit to the BRICS nations and what they're going to be doing. I do think that they have a legitimate cause and case and that they should try, but I don't think it's as serious as what most tend to believe it is. So that's my thought on that. I think, Wade, your question was, Does Russia adopting Bitcoin slow it down because it's the BRICS, or is it beneficial? Can you just reiterate one more time?
No, I actually think that that Russia not blocking or allowing the use of Bitcoin inside their territory is actually eliminates some of the tail risk, because my concern was effectively that with the amount of uranium the West purchases from the BRICS countries or incoming BRICS countries, that that's actually going to be an energy bottleneck for us. Because our only solution, I believe, is small modular reactors in this country to cover all of the EVs and all the strain we have with the electric grid here. And if the BRICS countries don't accept Bitcoin for payment, for instance, for uranium in the next 20, 30 years, that would be a risk for us, I would think. So Russia putting themselves in a position where they're at least letting it go through their financial rails, I actually think is kind of de-risking for us. But I don't know what you guys think about that.
No, so I agree with you 100% with that. I think it's inevitable. I think it just, once it starts to seep into your country, your system, your rails, there's no way getting out of it. It slowly takes over. And that's just kind of by design of Bitcoin, because it's decentralized. It's permissionless. It doesn't matter how much we sanction Russia or China or any of these countries, they can still do trade and can be done instantaneously. It can be done faster. And so I think once these countries start to understand the inevitability of Bitcoin and there's no stopping it, you might see the countries that we perceive as being against us adopted at a faster rate. And I think even if Trump was to become the president and we get the Senator Lummis bill for the strategic reserve, I still think we're late to the game. It would be very naive of us to believe that Russia and China aren't acquiring this in masses right now. They have no reason not to. They have all the potential to gain, and there's very little tail risk to it. So yeah, you're right, Wade. I think just more open speech and talk about these countries using it is only going to make it the adoption faster. But I still think US is going to be last to that game.
Do you think that they really are accumulating just based off of price action, though? I mean, it seems like if they were, the price action would be way higher.
So there's different ways, right? You can do it at like OTC, over-the-counter, where it's not as subtle as if you were using exchanges. But I doubt they're buying it. I would assume that they have a lot of miners that are just accumulating it and doing it that way. They have both China and Russia are energy rich, and so I would assume that they're digging right into that infrastructure and utilizing that way or that aspect to acquire Bitcoin.
Yep. The beauty of Bitcoin is then that will still either way would still cut into the supply. I mean, that would almost be like a halving on top of a halving. I think that is the smart play, and like game theory kind of says that. I just think we would see some other signs instead of it. It seems like the TradFi games that are being played is what's suppressing the price. And if something like that were happening, even on a smaller scale, I feel like we would have more of a price action. I don't know. I'm also a borderline crayon eater.
yeah. I think we might all be a little over our skis on this discussion, but there's a lot of people that think with the futures market, you're able to kind of not manipulate the price, but kind of keep it where you want it to be for a certain time. But again, just because I'm not that smart, I just used the balloon and underneath the water analogy. People can try and manipulate it as much as they want, but at some point, at any given time, it's going to pop above the water. And so that's all I care about. And my thesis is in looking for next month, next year. I'm holding this until I can pass it on to my kids. So,
haven't we seen Saylor and the MicroStrategy strategy leg into this trade over like 4 years, though, and really not appreciably influence the price? I mean, just thinking from folks who are buying it, you know, off the market, and it still doesn't look like it's changed. It still doesn't look like it's changed the structure that much over the last 4 years. That's just my look at the chart.
Again, I'm getting well over my skis with this discussion. I'm not, again, we need to have someone else up here. If anybody's in the audience that can and hit on this a little bit better or speak on it a little bit more eloquently, please come up. But again, I think the price will follow. It's just lagging. But when it moves, it'll move.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Shane.
I was going to say, I think it's just important to remember too, is I don't think the nation states really care right now what the price of Bitcoin is, right? They don't care that it's somewhere in the 50s or 60s. Like that's not their concern. When you got a printing press or, you know, a ledger that you control, it doesn't matter if it goes up to 2 million or 10 million, they'll just print whatever they need when, you know, the boat's taking on too much water, and they'll try to get into it as hard as they can. And they can spend infinite amounts at that point. So I think they are probably setting up facilities or have mining facilities that are probably working. I just don't think, you know, obviously I don't think it's a 100% or 0% type of thing. You know, it's one of those things where they're increasing a little bit gradually. Maybe nobody's noticing, whatever it is. And that's, I think, probably. Play for those guys right now is because when you do start to go, I think that's the end of the world economy as we know it. And if the world economy, these guys are still trying to unwind that. And I think, you know, history is a real proven thing here is when when economies come unwound too fast, you know, like a spring that's under too much tension, they can do a ton of damage. And I don't think those guys are quite ready to let go of the power and the good life that they have now and start going into, you know, those dark places.
That kind of ties back to the debate a little bit, because I think it got touched on at one point where I want to say it was Harris said something about, you know, if Trump gets in and he does X, Y, and Z, you're going to see the economy completely implode and it'll be the worst. You know, these economists say it's going to be the worst thing that's happened, even bigger than the Great Depression, something along those lines. And it really felt like if you understand the trajectory that our economy is on anyway, it felt like, yeah, you know, this is going to happen one way or another. You're just figuring out who to blame it on. And it's not like any of her policies are only going to make it worse. I mean, Trump can maybe either delay it or he'll probably just end up doing the same thing. But it just seems like they're setting up people to take the fall. It's a hot potato. They want the other person to be holding that potato when it all comes crumbling down, or be able to blame it on somebody else. It almost seems like the Democrats don't, if they were smart, they wouldn't want to win this one.
Good morning, y'all. This is Randy. I appreciate what Shane just said and what Jordan just followed up with. You're both hitting on a few of the key points. I couldn't keep quiet. I'm sitting here cleaning my tools. But I had to chime in because you guys are hitting on, I think, the key element that's really going to define our generation, and that is the power play that's now happening around the world. U.S. has held the hegemony of the world for the last 100 years or so. We're talking built upon an economic system and then the military system behind that. It is beginning to crumble, and BRICS is trying to raise itself up into that position. Of course, China is, Russia is specifically. The issue is when there's a power vacuum, people try to scramble and build up that power. So we're in a paradigm shift around the world of who holds the power over the largest amount of people and resources. And so that's what we're seeing with BRICS. Even though BRICS just started out as a trade union, it's if you read the book Mandibles, it is a story almost exactly like that, where if they adopt an economic system or a currency like Bitcoin, it can literally crush the economic hegemony of the U.S. dollar. And all of us as Bitcoiners have to be aware of all the power plays that are happening, not just between nation states, but also in nation state unions like BRICS, UN, and so forth, but also at the local level, right? Can we affect our power up, the power held at the local level? And that's where the talks of sheriffs and stuff like that come in. And then down to the family unit, are we based on a sound monetary system for our home, for our communities, for our churches, etc. And I think all of that is playing out. The variables are intense. We don't know how it's going to happen. And we don't know if Bitcoin can be fully co-opted by nation states or nation state units or unions. But they're going to try. And we have to be prepared for that, I think. So I just had to weigh in with a few of the variables that are, I think I see happening. And that it's going to be a black period, a dark period, I think, because power, everybody wants this power, and they're going to fight for it.
Randy, I wish you would come up and drop your knowledge bombs on us more often. That was great.
Yes, please, Randy, come up here more. I liked hearing that.
It made a lot of what Randy said, and this idea keeps popping into my head as other people have made comments too, of like, what are we going to do as Bitcoiners and specifically as Americans, but this affects people all across the world too that operate in dollars. What are we going to do when people no longer accept a dollar for any amount of Bitcoin? Because at some point they will print it and it will be completely worthless. And I mean, I think the answer is you're going to have to work for Bitcoin, and we need to start thinking and preparing for that eventuality or probability. Would love to get Lisa or Randy's take on that.
Please go ahead, Randy. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say it's hard to say what form Bitcoin is going to take in the future. I mean, within context of a currency as a store of value, we already see how it's coming out. Companies, institutions, people are holding it as a store of value, but as a medium of exchange is where it gets really interesting. And we're not, our adoption rates around the world are not that great, but it's going to ramp up because the dollar as a store of value is going to decline. There's a point, obviously, all nation states will continue to push their dollars. And you know, if you read The Sovereign Individual, they talk about there's going to be a competition of power to... the competition is going between nation states competing for those people with economic power, and I see that Bitcoin is probably going to be the premier economic power, let's say in 5 to 10 years, but here's the thing, nation states are not going to give up their power easily. They're going to continue to print. They're going to continue to mandate that people use their dollars, pay their taxes in dollars, etc. Until the point where a major reset has to happen. So in some ways, we are kind of hoping for this major reset. We don't hope for is that it's going to be as black as it could be.
Sounds racist.
Obviously, black-pilled.
Lisa, can you add anything to that?
You know, I would love to. I feel so scattered, though, today. 9/11 is just like one of those days. I think it is the only day of the year that I just wake up in, like, not in shock, but like, everything in my body just is somber on this day.
I think one of my daughter's birthday is in a couple days, and so this time of year is now shifted to just like thinking about that, and I almost forget about 9/11. And I mean, take that negatively or positively, I think it's just neutral. I think it's more important to remember, you know, my daughter's birthday and all the joy that comes around that. I'm not saying that you should do something to like forget about it, but it's kind of been like a relief for me that's what this time of year gets me angled towards instead of remembering this darker moment. But with even within that tragedy, and I think this is the case with any tragedy, is there's a lot of good things that come out of it. I mean, America was already on this global empire mission before 9/11, and 9/11 like sped it up and amplified it, just like the GFC sped up and amplified the spending, and COVID amplified all of it. And as much as all those things suck, it's also each step along the way has opened up more people's eyes to the truth and has broken down the propaganda because they've had to overexpose themselves to try to accomplish their mission. And like kind of going along this theme we're talking about, they're going to keep doing that. There's going to be another crisis. They're going to overextend themselves. They're going to show their hand. And it's every time they do it, it's going to win more people over to our side, whether that's Bitcoin or freedom. Take that however you want. I'm just trying to make your day a little bit better, Lisa, because you always make our day a little bit
better. Oh, thanks. Well, you know, today is also my grandmother's birthday, and she died when I was 16. She was my favorite person in the entire world, and I think about her all the time. I actually have her keychain that I carry it around with me. It's got her Oldsmobile keys on it and her State Farm little fob. So, you know, but I guess when I think about 9/11 and the just intense loss and incineration of people that happened that were in those buildings, you know, what played out after, and I lived in Washington, D.C. at the time. That's where the company I worked for was based. It was the most, it was a different version of America than what we have today. My neighbors and I spent about 6 days in one of their houses together, just gathered around the TV. Actually left, I think, maybe the day after 9/11, I drove into New York City, but and I was only in there for one day and then drove back to D.C., I wanted to go see who, you know, the woman who is now the widow of my broker who I lost. He worked at Cantor. But what you noticed in D.C. and then driving into New York was everyone had an American flag on their car, right? The skies were quiet. There were no planes in the sky. So it was just incredibly silent. And no matter where you went, everyone was kind to one another. Like everyone kind of, that moment in time where, you know, I mean, things were closed, but I don't know, two days later, maybe in DC, like we went and bought an American flag, this gigantic American flag, and hung it out in front of our house. And everyone was doing that. People were in their streets just being neighbors with one another. And so when I think about how do we go forward in this country, I really pray that we don't have to have another moment like 9/11 to bring us together. I hope that, you know, Shane Hazels of the world get lifted up and, you know, can go into the greater population and spread the message that, you know, there is hope, et cetera. But, you know, so I guess in on this day, it's not that I'm suffering under the sadness of the thought of all of these lives and the people being literally incinerated in those towers, but it's this moment of like utter gravity of how do we recapture the feeling of the days following 9/11 that really united us as a country?
Yeah, hopefully we never have to have another 9/11, but hopefully we have many, many more 9/12s.
Yes, 100%. More 9/12s, bringing everybody together and getting along. So I just realized what time it is. We're a little bit past top of the hour. If anybody has any other last comments or anything they'd like to maybe end on a really good positive note, if you can beat Jordan, please, now's your chance.
Yeah. Let's end on a positive note. I'm just really excited and hopeful. I shared this in some of our group chats, but like most mornings when I wake up at like 4:15, 4:30, I take a little screenshot of my watch and share it. And somebody in the chats, I guess last night or something, just kind of said something that like really motivated me. And it made me realize every morning I wake up and I am on a mission to improve myself, improve my community, and keep becoming a threat to tyrants. And I would just challenge everybody to do whatever you can throughout the day to improve yourself, improve those around you, improve your community, and continue to make yourself a threat to tyrants.
I like that. And I think we're going to end it right there, everybody. I want to thank you all for coming out, joining the discussion today. Everybody who had us in the background, cancel all those voices in your head. I really appreciate it. Make sure to catch us every Monday through Friday. We do this 9 o'clock Central Standard Time. Make sure we go check out the Bitcoin Veterans handle on X, and check out the Bitcoin Veterans podcast. We had Alex Fetsky on last night. It was a really good show. I was able to catch bits and pieces while I was driving. But go give that a listen. It's really good. And make sure you check out our Noster page. We have that exclusive interview with Anders at his pleb party. To see the whole video, I know we have clips here on X, but to see the whole video, you got to go to Noster. Check us out on the Bitcoin Veteran handle there. So I'll see you all tomorrow morning. Get out there, crush it. Make sure we push out those white pills, and have a great day.